lights. Camera. Action. It's the KSL Movie Show.
It gave the audience feelings they weren't sure they should enjoy.
The week's big movie review, movie news, games, and prizes. Here's Andy Farnsworth and Steve Sales.
Like a slice of butter melting on top of a big old pile of flapjacks.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Today's movie show is so fetch, you won't even be able to believe it.
And are you trying to make that work too?
Well, I was going to say, if you got that reference, then that means you probably are interested in our big movie review of today on the movie show, which is Mean Girls.
Yes.
Get in, loser.
Welcome, Katie.
You're never going to believe what I found this morning.
Your burn book.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
I could not get over how much Busy Phillips looked like Renee Rapp, who plays Regina George.
Unbelievable.
To where I was like, is that like Busy Phillips from back in the 90s? Because it sure looked a lot like her.
Oh, my gosh. They could be sisters.
Well, the big movie review sponsored by Paris RV. Spring is just around the corner, and the deals are sizzling hot on leftover 2023 RVs at Paris RV. See them all at ParisRV.com. So, Steve, Mean Girls is based on the Broadway musical. This time, it's not, and you wouldn't have known this from the first two trailers, because it seems like they went to great lengths to not emphasize the fact that it was a musical, but it is a musical.
Yes.
The musical premiered on Broadway in 2017. It was based on the movie that came out in 2024, and which was based on a book that had come out a couple of years earlier. The original Mean Girls. I meant 2004. If
okay.
I said 2024, I meant 2004. The original is a cult classic to a lot of people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of people. On Wednesdays, we wear pink. That's another line that people. I remember one of my kids was in the band, and all the band kids were like, would wear pink because of that line. And then their teacher would wear this pink bunny outfit from like a Christmas story.
Oh, demented Easter bunny.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, so the first one has a real cultural cachet among a lot of people. So the question is, does Mean Girls, the musical version, how does it compare? And should it even be compared movie to movie? Because it's kind of different.
It is different, but, I mean, the characters are the same.
Characters are the same, and the story is the same. Katie Heron is homeschooled her whole life with her mom in Africa.
Yeah.
And then she comes home and goes to school with other people for the first time in her life as a 16-year-old.
I thought that was a nice transition, the song where she's, like, finally getting out of. She realized that she loved being in Kenya, and it was a great experience. But now it's time to go, you know, live with real people.
Yeah, and there's a cool transition where she goes through the door of the tent, and suddenly she's in California.
Yeah, I thought that was
nice. The kind
of
stuff you can do with a musical.
Yeah, it's perfect.
So she struggles to fit in. She finds a couple of friends that are kind of considered outcasts, one of whom is Auli Carvalho, who was the voice of Moana.
I did not know that. I mean, once I saw her name at the end, I'm like, oh, that's Moana.
Yeah, and so she hangs with them a little bit. But she also draws interest from the Plastics, three super hot girls that take an interest in Katie. And then so basically, if you're not familiar with the story of Mean Girls, what does Katie do when offered power and social standing? Does she take it? Does it corrupt? That's the question.
Well, yes. And the answer is for you to find out.
Exactly. So tell me what you thought as far as what did you think of it on its own?
I had fun, and part of the fun I had was based on the three girls sitting behind me who were howling through the entire movie. They got every joke, they got every nuance, and I thought, oh, cool. I mean, I paid more attention just so that I could kind of keep up with them, even though I thought they had a great time, and so I did too.
I think it's always fun when you get really good audience. First of all, this is one of the reasons why it's...
I didn't see it the same
theater,
night you did.
Right, but with the theater experience helps comedies, I think, more than almost any other movie.
Oh, no question.
Because sometimes you need to feel like you're not the only... Sometimes you don't want to be the only person who laughs out loud in a crowded room, but when other people are laughing, you can kind of let loose.
Well, the studios used to do that on purpose. They would they want to fill the room for a comedy, no question.
So I enjoyed it. I thought... As I was watching it, first of all, my daughter enjoyed it even more. She wanted to see it immediately again after we finished it. She was excited to go with her friends. She's a 16-year-old junior in high school. And as I watched it and I thought about it and I thought about what the differences were, I thought this really enough has changed between 2004 and 2024 for the teen experience and the high school experience and just everything about it, that having a newer version of Mean Girls is actually kind of a good idea. You know, they say Michael J. Fox in his documentary had said about remakes, like, could they do we need to fix something in the original, or is there more of the story to tell? Well, this tells a little bit more story. You get a little bit about some other characters that I don't think was so prevalent in the first one, but doing it for another generation, you know, like me watching a teen comedy from the American Graffiti, maybe a good example for me. It goes back far enough that I'm not going to relate in the same way that somebody who watched that in 1971. Wayne's World was one that all of my friends as teens loved. It's not going to be watched the same by a kid today it would back then. So having another version of Mean Girls that this younger generation can just sort of hook to, that feels more reflective of their experience, I think that's a good thing too.
Well, and the fact that bullying is universal. We've had it forever and we still have it. Regina George, though, my gosh, her character in this one was delightfully...
She's a force of nature. She has her own song, like the Roar song. Or the one where, like, Regina George.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of my favorites.
Yeah, no, I mean, the young actress, what's her name again?
Renee Rapp.
She is incredible. Her voice range and the deliciousness of her just evilness is just, it's catchy. I just, like, wow, she is a nightmare, but I want to hang out with her for some reason.
So for me, I gave it a B-. I thought it was just below good, but it was definitely better than average. But I feel like my daughter would give it a higher score. I didn't ask her to give it a letter grade, but I feel like she would give it a higher score based on how she reacted. And that's, I think, her grade may be more important for a lot of people's interest than necessarily what I personally thought of it.
So I gave it a B- originally, and I thought, no, it was... And so I erased the minus.
So you've given it a B?
Yeah.
Okay. So a B- from me, a B. It's Mean Girls. It is rated PG-13. It seems like language was most of it. There wasn't really anything else that stood out to me. Just, you know, your 8-year-old kid.
The
you don't
outfits,
want him to think this
maybe.
Is what high school is like.
Some of the outfits were a little racy.
A little bit risque. So for family purposes, maybe stick with maybe 11 and 12 and up, or just heed the PG-13 altogether. But your teenagers will probably like it the best.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, so that is the big movie review sponsored by Paris RV. As we have the rest of the movie show today, we'll be talking about The Beekeeper with Jason Statham.
Yes.
We've got The Book of Clarence, which is, well, I'll tell you about that when we get there. It stars Lakeith Stanfield. And then American Fiction, which was one of my favorite comedies of last year, because it technically released last year.
Well, and it's a drama comedy, so don't think it's all giggles. But
no, that's true.
Yeah.
And then we have on streaming, we have Lift with Kevin Hart. We have Role Play on Prime Video with Kaley Cuoco. And then we have Self-Reliance on Hulu with Jake Johnson.
Yes, I actually enjoyed that, although I thought the ending was a little flat.
Those are all movies that are coming up on the movie show. And if we have time, we got a couple of streaming series, including Echo on Disney Plus.
Yes.
And Ted on Peacock. And yes, it's the teddy bear.
Yeah, he's a naughty boy, but oh my gosh, is he ever funny.
All right, so we'll talk about all that and much more, including Telephone Torture, the movie show Top 10, and we'll have an interview with Virginia Pierce, the Utah Film Commissioner.
Yes.
The movie show.
It's a fake laugh.
It's real. On KSL News Radio.
The movie show, Steve, let's get to another movie. This was one I did not get to see, but you did. And
well, we had to kind of split it up.
We did. There was a lot of movies to see this week. And
you saw Book of Clarence.
And I saw The Beekeeper. At basically the same time, we just went into different auditoriums.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Steve, let's do The Beekeeper.
Okay. Sound.
Well,
Mrs. Parker and I were friends. She was the only person who ever took care of me.
This is private property.
Do you know what they do here? Scamming the weakest in our society.
Buddy, I'm counting to three.
One, two, three.
Here's one thing I did not expect from this movie. The beginning, he has a little beekeeping farm.
Jason Statham.
Jason
Let's
Statham.
Make this clear.
Next to Felicia Rashad's place. She's a, you know, widow, older. But they kind of have a symbiotic.
Was her husband a doctor in Philadelphia by any chance?
No, I don't think so.
Named Dr. Huxtable?
No. But she has a hornet problem in her barn. He comes over, puts this little thing on it, and says, it's taken care of. And for that, he's got a bunch of bees, and, you know, he's going to bring her over some honey. And so they have this really cool relationship. This is the coolest thing about, not cool, but they get into a part where there's a company that tries to scam people out of their money.
Oh.
And this happens.
So this is a real thing.
Yes. And she's going along, like, she calls the company and says, hey, I'm having this problem. And he said, okay, well, just install this software.
Oh, dear goodness.
Yeah, and you're watching this, and she's trying to go through all the steps. She goes, maybe I should call my bank. He said, well, you could do that, but it's going to take some time to, you know, they've got the answers. And the guy that's on the phone with her, he's also like the Wolf of Wall Street guy.
Oh.
So he's putting her on hold and going, all right,
we
everybody,
got one.
Pay attention. Here's how this goes. And then she not only her accounts, but she also has an account where she oversees a charity that has over $2 million in it for kids.
Oh, that's not good.
No. So when
all of it's gone. They liquidate everything.
They drain everything. Felicia makes a very tragic decision.
But they didn't realize that Felicia's neighbor was Jason Statham.
Exactly, because he's a beekeeper. And now that's kind of weird. Like, what is a beekeeper? Obviously, he has bees. But in the CIA, there is a division that not even the director knew about, which just seems kind of dumb.
Right.
That can.
Hey, there's a lot of things that happen in government that other parts of the government don't know about.
So the beekeepers are supposed to keep the hive safe. And no matter who's in charge, if it's the hive's in trouble, then they come in and clean it up. So they have complete
autonomy. You
know, yeah, carte blanche to do whatever they want. And the people that know, like, oh no, you activated a beekeeper? That can't be good. But the characters in this movie, there's Josh Hutcherson, who plays the little jerk. And you've got Jeremy Irons, who's supposed
He's from Five Nights at Freddy's, for people who want to know. He was the main character.
And he was also in the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And so it's just one of those. Jeremy Irons is in it. Minnie Driver's in it.
A lot.
So all these people are in it, but the beekeeper kind of goes on a little rampage, and he's going to take out the call center.
That stole the money.
Yeah, and boy, does he take care of business.
So as a Jason Statham fan, do you feel like you're leaning more positive?
Well, I really liked the beginning. I thought that whole thing about the scam was really interesting and important. It got a little sillier as it went on, as he took out.
As these things are wont to do.
Hundreds of people. I mean, it wanted to be John Wick. But he obviously has a little bit more, physicality, athleticism. I don't mean to
knock
Keanu, but Keanu's more of a shoot guy. This one, he's kicking, cutting. Everybody's getting worked over pretty good. So I liked it. I gave it a B, and I gave it a B.
Okay. So you thought it was a good movie, not an excellent movie.
Exactly.
Okay. So that is The Beekeeper, and that is rated, I assume, R.
It is R rated.
I watched the trailer, and I was like, okay, this looks pretty violent, too.
Yeah, no, he does some damage.
Yeah, including, you were telling me, a guy that goes off a cliff in a unique way.
Oh, you'll see that in the trailer. You kind of applaud it in a way. You're like, bye-bye.
And that is The Beekeeper. Our text question of the day, what is your favorite high school movie in honor of Mean Girls? I know it's not necessarily related to The Beekeeper, but I forgot to say it when we were talking about Mean Girls. Our text question of the day, what is your favorite high school movie? It's a movie that encapsulates what high school was like for you. We'd love to hear your responses at 57500. So text those into us, your favorite high school movie.
It's the KSL Movie Show.
The end is inevitable. Your kind is headed for extinction.
Maybe so, sir, but not today.
Big movie review, movie news, games, and prizes. Here's Andy Farnsworth and Steve Sales.
Right now, we are being so unoffensive, we might as well be a Hallmark Christmas movie. You know what I'm saying?
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Steve, we've got a couple more movies we need to get to today, including one that is one of my favorite. And you said it in the earlier segment during the movie show preview. It's not like a comedy, like slapstick kind of comedy, but it's one of the funniest movies I saw last year, and it is called American Fiction.
Listen, Monk, you need some time off. Why don't you go back and spend a little more time with your family?
You know that all successful writers are tormented by their families.
You look fat.
Okay.
So that is Jeffrey Wright as an author named Monk Ellison. He's a black novelist who's frustrated by the fact that little interest is shown in his serious work, which he has a whole bunch of novels.
But his real name, by the way, is Thelonious.
Thelonious. And he goes by Monk.
Which I thought was very cool.
But at any rate, his other works are being feted and popular, including one by Issa Rae as an author. But they're just filled with what he feels like are offensive racial tropes, but they're all becoming bestsellers. And so one day in frustration, he decides to write under a pseudonym, and he writes the schlockiest novel full of the worst stereotypes he can think of. And he forces his agent to send it to the publishing houses, basically as an act of defiance to him.
What was the name of the book? It was something Filoni, or what? It was something really. He spelled it wrong.
Yes, no, and it's the worst offensive stereotypes. That the dialogue is all things like, you know, me happen to go here. It's everything he hates, and it was just a thing like, oh, you want black literature? Here you go. Only then, unfortunately, they love it. All the white people, by the way, they're all white people in publishing, and they love it. And an excerpt is read, and like all the white women in the audience are just like enraptured by it. And this drives him crazy because now he actually has to sort of adopt this persona of like a thug, an ex-con. In fact, that's how he stays anonymous, is by telling him he's on the run from the cops, which they eat up even more.
Yeah, right.
But there's a lot of other things going on too, including stuff dealing with his family. But that's where I thought the movie was at its best. It was really well balanced. The director is Cord Jefferson.
Cord.
And it's his first movie, and I thought that it was really good. I thought the supporting cast was solid, including Sterling K. Brown.
Oh, Sterling K. Brown was perfect.
And then Tracy Ellis Ross, and it was really well done all around. But it was also like really funny, and the ending. At first, I was like, what? And then the more I thought about it, I was like, that was the perfect ending to this movie. I don't know if that ending to a different type of movie would have worked, or if they hadn't followed the storyline that they'd followed that leads to this. But it's Jeffrey Wright's, I think, didn't we give him the Utah Film Critics Association? He was either a finalist or he won one of our awards for this role for American Fiction. But that's how highly we regarded it. And I thought I gave it an A-, and I thought it was one of the better movies I saw last year overall, and one of the best comedies, to me second only to Barbie as far as comedy.
Well, I thought it was also very poignant because there's a lot of family issues. But Sterling K. Brown, he seems like the most messed up of the family, and yet he's the one that comes up with the idea that, look, dude, I get it. You feel like inadequate. Let people love you. And I thought when that started to rise up in the film, that really resonated with me. I thought, you really, the idea that your family could support you that well, that you would like actually reconsider the idea that you were worthless, and that he felt that way. So that's why I said it's not just a comedy. In fact,
that's good to point out. Thank you.
The best movies are usually dramas with some comedic moments in it, and I thought that's what this was.
This feels similar to The Holdovers. It's way more similar to The Holdovers, which was very funny but was really a dramatic story,
right,
versus something, you know, silly, goofy slapstick. This is not slapstick.
No, not at all.
Verbal slapstick maybe, but it's
awkwardly funny at times. And I liked the girlfriend that lived across the street. I thought she was amazing.
So that's American Fiction. A- for me.
A- for me.
A- for Steve. Now, we also have another movie that we wanted to get to, and that is The Book of Clarence.
Mom, one day I'm going to get you out of here. I have a plan.
What are we doing here?
Jesus lives there.
I want to be like that in 10 years.
I want to be like that now.
Now, The Book of Clarence stars Lakeith Stanfield. It's set at the same time as Jesus.
Okay.
Set in 33 AD in Jerusalem. And this is one that, as I went in, I was kind of hesitant, because I wasn't sure what kind of story they were going to tell. It's basically, if I could give you a quick synopsis, it's a guy named Clarence at the time of Jesus. He's a non-believer, but he also sees that Jesus has a lot of followers. And he thinks, why don't I try this Messiah thing? Now, it's not as silly overall as that sounds on the surface.
Is it irreverent?
Well, so that's what I was going to say. So I needed to set the tone because as I was watching this and I went in, I was like, is it going to try to walk the line of full satire like Monty Python's Life of Brian? Mm. Or what is it going to do? Or is it just going to be like something like we're going to put modern themes just into 33 AD Jerusalem times? And there's a little bit of that. And all the cast, all of the people who are native to Jerusalem are black. The only white people in the movie are the Romans and Benedict Cumberbatch, who's not a Roman in it. But you're going to have to see the movie to find out what role Benedict Cumberbatch plays. But it's got this orchestral score that's reminiscent of the Ten Commandments. It's got graphic packages as the three acts of the movie each has an act that looks like the intermission title card from the Ten Commandments.
You know, he wants to make that movie.
James Samuel does?
Yes.
Okay, so, but I was watching it, and there were times where it would veer like really into the what is happening sacrilegious part, but then it would veer the other way, and then it would veer into like really genuine stuff. And I will say this, even though it kind of kept weaving back and forth, I really was happy with where it ended. This is one where if you're going to watch it, don't give up if it veers too far to one side or the other, because I do think that James Samuel ties it up really well. Lakeith Stanfield's really good actor.
Oh, fabulous.
And there's some really funny stuff. Alfre Woodard plays Mother Mary.
Oh.
Jesus's mother. And sometimes there's these weird mix of modern things. So it's a lot of different things. I don't think it would. I think if I was black, it would have connected with me even more. But I really liked what they were trying to do. And I actually applaud James Samuel for not going too far one way or the other. I thought he walked a pretty good line. For me, this was a B. I don't know if I could recommend it to everybody because I do know that depending on sensitivities to certain things, you may not want to see it, and that's fine. But if you do make it to the end, there's some real emotional impact and a really good message beyond. I just thought it was really well done. But you got to watch the whole thing. If you cut somewhere in the middle, I think you'll feel a lot more dissatisfied than if you finish it.
What's it rated?
It is rated R.
Okay.
Wait, no, it's rated PG-13. It is rated PG-13.
Okay.
Just for some violence. There's nothing visually objective other than some naked statues, you know, that Romans would have from sure. About that time period. So that is the Book of Clarence. I give it a B, PG-13, and it's in the basic wide release.
It's 2,500 screens.
Yeah, so it's playing in a lot of theaters. So that is American Fiction and Book of Clarence. We've got the movie show Top 10 when we return.
Movie reviews and Hollywood news. The KSL Movie Show.
Well, Steve, because we have so many movies this week, yeah. And we're going to get a chance to talk to the commission our next segment, we want to make sure we fit in all the movies that we have this weekend. So before we do the movie show top 10, let's review Lyft.
Okay. Agent Gladwell.
Am I in trouble?
You and your friends are looking at identity fraud, money laundering, and transportation of stolen property. We need you to steal something.
All right, it's an action comedy that kind of mixes Ocean's 11 and Mission Impossible. Kevin Hart plays a guy who leads a perfectly culturally balanced team. Did you notice that?
Yeah, yeah.
Of expert thieves. After one mission goes wrong, they're brought in by Gugu Mbatha-Raw's Interpol agent, and then she gives them a chance to walk away without punishment if they complete a dangerous assignment, which is to steal $500 million in gold from an airplane in flight before it can make it to a very bad guy played by Jean Reno.
Yes.
For me, this didn't break any new ground in the action comedy category. I didn't think the story was that original, but I thought the action scenes were done pretty well. And there's some creative use of aircraft in there.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't feel like the writers fleshed out any of the characters at all.
None.
At all.
This was Heart of Stone, only not with Gal Gadot.
This is the one you were talking about that was like that. Yes. And it just, I mean, they had a good banter together. And they seemed like a cool team.
And Vincent D'Onofrio, you can't go wrong with him. He's always fun.
Yes. And I actually, when I was watching this, I was like, oh my gosh, that's Philip Seymour Hoffman. That should have been Philip Seymour Hoffman if he were still with us in that role. But D'Onofrio did a great job too. Considering he plays the Kingpin, this was very different than the Kingpin.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, I just thought it was, it's like Chinese food. I was hungry after another half hour. It just didn't, it did not resonate with me.
The good news is this is streaming on Netflix. It is PG-13. So this is one where I don't know. I mean, if it was in theaters, I would say, you know what, save your money and wait for streaming. The good news is you don't have to. It's already there. So if you, it's a free, easy to check out. I bet it'll actually do some good numbers because Kevin Hart is pretty charming and he does action. And it's not with the bigger action star, Dwayne Johnson, this time. He's the lead action guy.
No, that's right.
And he holds it up
pretty
well.
Not sure he actually sells it, but he's very serious in this role. It's not like, you know, him being funny and goofy.
Yeah. So for me, this one was, I gave this one a C+.
I gave it a C.
Oh, wow. Wait, did I give it a C+? Wait, let me do this. Now I've got to check my own work. Yeah, C+ for me. So I gave it, I apparently liked it even more than you did.
Yeah.
And that is called Lift. All right, now it's time for the movie show Top 10.
All right.
10, 9. The KSL Movie Show. Top 10.
5, 4, 3, 2.
All right, we can dispense with the countdown, I think. But we do got to hear the goat. So there we go. All right, Steve. Movie Show Top 10, sponsored by Call Climate Services. And don't forget that from repair to replacement and installation, callclimate.com. Number 10, Steve, is Poor Things, which I'm seeing it in more theaters now. It seems to be expanding a little bit each week.
Up till last week, it was only 800 screens, which kind of surprised me. I thought it was wider than that, and it hasn't made that much money. But it's Emma Stone's movie, and she really delivers, I thought.
It is cinema as art, but content-wise, that's the only warning we got to give.
Yeah.
It's not going to be for everybody.
No, there's a lot of
nudity. It's for cinephiles
nudity.
And people who aren't bothered by content, nudity and language and some weird concepts, too. So that's Poor Things. Number 9, Ferrari, with Adam Driver as Enzo Ferrari.
Yeah.
Okay. Enzo Ferrari, and their accents were a lot like this.
No, yeah, that would have been more like Luigi.
Yeah, but that's what they kind of sounded like.
Well,
by having the American actors use Italian accents, I thought that was a mistake.
That was a mistake. But I loved Penelope Cruz in that film.
Yes, and she fortunately already has a European accent.
So yes, thank goodness.
It was more believable. Number 8, The Iron Claw. That's the wrestling movie with Zac Efron.
Yeah.
You liked it? No, I liked it more than you did.
Yes.
You just didn't like the dad was the worst.
I hated the dad, and I thought it was such a downer movie.
It is about wrestlers, and it is sad, but there's also some good messages sort of.
The brothers'
sewn
moment
in there.
Was cool.
The brothers are the best part of it. Number 7, The Color Purple. We both liked this.
It's in my top 10, and it's a musical, so be ready for that. But I thought it actually did a better job than Spielberg's.
Number 6, Boys in the Boat. We both loved this.
Loved, but man, the overseas numbers are non-existent.
Really?
Yes.
Nobody wants to hear about American superiority in the 1936 Olympics.
But it is a safe watch.
No, it really is. It's something you can watch with the entire family. Number 5, Anyone But You, not for the whole family.
Nope.
But
it's got two gorgeous people in it, and they're kind of fun.
And it's a rom-com that checks the boxes. And number 4, Migration. I'm surprised that's still in the top 5.
Actually, it's done pretty well. It's $154 million in a couple, 3 weeks?
Yeah, and it's good, but not great. I wouldn't put it up with some of the best of the Illumination movies.
No, but it's fun.
It is
entertaining.
And it's another safe for the whole family one. Number 3, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. You and I enjoyed it more than the other critics in our market.
In the entire
pretty
universe.
Pretty much everywhere else. It is what it is.
Yes.
Not great cinema, but it's fun and it's got the charm. If you hate Jason Momoa or Patrick Wilson, then you won't like the movie. But if you like them, I don't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah, and Amber Heard's in it a lot more than I thought.
And then number 2, Night Swim, debuted at number 2. I thought this was a turd in the pool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
And then number 1, still Wonka.
Wonka, here's the numbers on Wonka. 167 domestic, 304 foreign. It's about to go over $500 million.
But it's magical. I mean, it's hard to argue with that.
It's a pick for me as far as a fun family movie.
All right, so that is the Movie Show Top 10, sponsored by Call Climate Services. When we come back, we'll have our friend the commish who just walked in, and we're going to talk about celebrating 100 years of filmmaking in Utah.
It's the KSL Movie Show.
It's going to work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible.
The week's big movie review, movie news, games, and prizes. Here's Here's Andy Farnsworth and Steve Sales.
We're slow learners, and we're not particularly good listeners.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Is that like mean announcer?
I was going to say, Steve and I are going to put those descriptors to the test right here as we talk as slow learners and not very good listeners. Virginia, you'll have to be the judge of that. We're pleased to welcome...
We hang on every word she says.
Oh, exactly. Right. But the slow learner part, you know.
Oh, well, there's that.
But anyway, Virginia Pierce, the director of Utah Film Commission, joins us. And Virginia, you know, I remember not too long ago we were celebrating the centennial of Utah being a state. And now we're celebrating the centennial of filmmaking in Utah, which means they started making films in Utah not long after it started becoming a state.
Yeah.
Something I never put together till recently.
1924. It's amazing that the productions that were here at that time and the photos that we have of the crew and the giant cameras and, you know.
Was it Ramona?
No, the first two were The Covered Wagon, which filmed in and around northern
That's appropriate,
Utah.
I think.
Yeah. And The Deadwood Coach, starring Tom Mix,
That
shot in southern Utah. And sadly, The Deadwood Coach is a lost film, as many of the silent films are from that era. They no longer exist. But The Covered Wagon does, and we're going to be doing a screening with a Wurlitzer and everything. You know,
Really?
So it'll be cool.
Is there going to be somebody live accompanying on like a piano?
Yeah, so the Ogden's Piri Egyptian Theater is turning 100 this year as well. And maybe I should back up and say we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of film and television in Utah.
Well, I did sort of
mention. Okay, good. Okay.
Did you notice how many studios are also celebrating 100 years?
I know, it's all the same.
Disney,
Warner
Universal,
Brothers,
Paramount, they're all.
Yeah, and
it's almost like everybody realized this was going to be a thing at about the same time.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's impressive that Utah was in the game at that time because, you know, we were in the middle of nowhere compared to California, and they were mostly shooting films on a back lot in California. But, you know, it's really a true testament to some of the great thinkers in southern Utah, the Perry brothers and the Gouldings, that saw opportunity both in tourism and with, you know, Hollywood, which was sort of new. And they went and said, you know, we've got locations here that you should be looking at. And that's how
the first location scouts.
Yes, I know.
They invented the position.
Oh, they would pave roads to any place you wanted to make a movie.
Yeah, I mean.
You couldn't do that now.
Oh, no. There's a lot of things that went down that you could not do now. But it's been so fun to look back at the history. And so Ogden is going to show, they have a Wurlitzer in the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to show The Covered Wagon in March and with a piano player as well. Do you even call it a piano?
Organist?
Organist, yeah.
Well, so you guys had a big thing last night up at the Capitol. So tell us a little bit about that. Who was there and how did it go?
Yeah, it was a opening reception of this beautiful exhibit that will be in the Capitol for the year. So please go see it. It's on the fourth floor. It takes up the whole fourth floor of the Capitol. It's really extensive. And we kicked it off in such a great fashion. We had some really special guests. We had Amy Redford, who, of course, is Robert Redford's daughter and a filmmaker in her own right.
Absolutely. Isn't she over Sundance now?
She's on the board.
On the board, okay.
Is just so engaged in the community. And, of course, Sundance is celebrating their 40th anniversary this year, so we had a lot to talk about. Jerusha Hess, who she and her husband, of course, directed Napoleon Dynamite 20 years ago, which makes me feel real.
And she did my favorite, Austin Land. She was the director on that one.
Yes, and everyone should check out her new short called 95 Senses. It's on the short list for Oscars, and it's amazing. And we had Jim Dark, who wrote the book When Hollywood Came to Utah, which he's kind of our preeminent film historian, knows everything.
He does. He's amazing.
And we had Danny Peikoff, who's the executive director of Kevin Costner's new film.
Which we get to see this year.
Yes. He had really great things to say about just why Utah and how they got here. And then we had a great special guest in Lacey Chabert, who you may know from
the Queen
Party
of Christmas
Five,
movies.
Yeah. And even, you know, Mean Girls. But, of course, is the queen of Hallmark. She's done over 30 Hallmark movies, including two here in Utah just in the last couple of years. So it was so fun to have all of them here and talk about why Utah and just different facets of the industry.
She's fallen in love with literally 30 people from her childhood.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. She goes back and
after she's come back from the big
her
city.
Hometown. Yes.
Well, but it sounds like it went really well. And you were saying, especially Lacey was just so good with everybody there and having a chance to visit with the local people and legislators' wives and things like that.
And just to hear them who aren't from Utah talk about the things that we already know to be true about Utah, that everyone's so nice and we're especially film friendly. People are excited to open their homes and welcome film crews and have things in their neighborhood, and it's kind of exciting. And it was just really, you know, great to hear.
The first movie I ever remember recognizing Utah in was Enter the Ninja 2. It's so stupid. It was supposed to be Los Angeles, but it was filmed in downtown Salt Lake, straight with the Salt Lake PD cars that had the Salt Lake with a white logo over it, so it just said police. And the final shot was this helicopter circling, and the ninjas fought on the top of what was the American Towers, and it was supposed to be L.A., and then as it circles, you see the old Salt Palace Bowl, you see the Salt Lake Temple, and I was like, they just didn't even care that it didn't look like Los Angeles.
I don't know that movie. That one didn't make it into the exhibit.
There's a big fight at Liberty Park. It's one of my favorite cult classics.
You know what I finally saw not too long ago? Carnival of Souls.
I just saw that recently, too.
It's so cheesy and so weird.
That one is in the theater, in the exhibit. And that one, I think, it is
That was at
weird.
The old Saltaire, right?
Yeah, but I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah, kind of like, whoa.
Yeah.
Well, one of the cool things, too, and that even goes to the thing I was laughing about with the 1980s-style police cars in Salt Lake. They have a fight on the old apparatus at Liberty Park, which was the greatest playground apparatus ever in the state of Utah, was that. And they have a fight on it. But the old Saltaire, it's preserved in these movies, and you can actually look at what Utah looked like back in those days forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
There's
I think so that's really history. Neat. What would you say, Virginia, if you had to pick? What is the most iconic shot ever shot in Utah? Like, you'd say this. I know. But
I'm sure you
have a huge list. But, like, when you think of, you see this movie and you're like, Utah.
I feel like there's two kind of immediate recognition for Utah. One is Monument Valley. I mean, John Ford and the Westerns to Forrest Gump and, you know,
That's
using
thinking
that.
You're going to say Forrest Gump.
You know, that iconic highway and the bluffs in the background. And then I think
When he was doing his run across America, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I think the Salt Flats. It just is, there's nothing like it. And there's been some really effective use of, you know, parts of the Caribbean.
Yep.
And Independence
Con
Day.
Air.
Con Air. Of course, the World's Fastest Indian. There's been some really cool movies shot out there. So those are, I mean, there's so many.
Was Dead Horse Point what Tom Cruise was hanging off of?
That's another one. Thelma and Louise, you know, they go off the edge there.
The Vermilion Cliffs.
Yeah.
Well, and don't forget Dumb and Dumber.
Dumb and Dumber.
The Salt Lake Airport. Classic. I mean, you can go to the apartment that Lloyd and Harry lived in that's in Salt Lake City. It's like this old double brick thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's to me, that's always fun is, wait a minute, I recognize that. Same with the Sandlot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a cult classic, and that has got so many different Utah locations that are recognizable.
Or Footloose.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did we get Kevin? Is he coming?
We're getting closer. We're in talks. We had announced something last night at the event with First Lady Abby Cox. We're going to be working on a project to support his goal of making 40,000 essential resource kits for people in need as part of his Six Degrees Foundation. And his goal is to create 40,000 kits in honor of the 40th anniversary of Footloose.
Really?
And we are going to be a part of it. So
that's
great. Getting closer to getting Kevin Bacon back to Utah.
I love it. He's done so many cool things lately. Just having fun with his daughter and the commercials. And
yeah. He seems great and super engaged with the movie, too. So.
Well, you've brought a treat with you today for our movie show listeners. Now, you guys have made a... is it a trailer or is it an actual
It's just a celebratory video about 100th anniversary of film in Utah.
All right, so and you might recognize the voice in this clip from that. I call it a sizzle reel because it's
sizzle. It is a sizzle reel.
All right, so let's hear part of the sizzle reel for 100 years of filmmaking and television in Utah.
Utah was always destined for the big screen. From classic westerns to modern dramas, our state has been a centerpiece of storytelling for 100 years.
The story is Utah. Trust me.
That voice sounded familiar.
Yeah.
I feel like I've heard it on this show even maybe before.
Yeah.
No, how cool is that to have Doug? Right.
Yes, I could think of no one better to voice our sizzle reel than, of course, the man, the myth, the legend of Doug Wright.
Well, and you know, I mean, he is a star in his turn in Work in the Glory Part 3 as hooligan number 5.
He was a full professional when he came in to record. He did it 5 different ways. It was just so fun to work with him. He knew exactly what he was doing, of course.
Good friend.
Virginia, thank you for joining us today, and congratulations on the kickoff. I'm looking forward to actually making it over to see the exhibit.
Yes, please go see
it. Any Christmas movies shooting right now with all the snow?
No, we're kind of in a lull right now. We're still recovering
from
the strike.
They come in the summertime and they make their own. It's just dumb.
Yeah, we're still getting back on our feet. So.
Well, even though we're at a new time, you'll still come join us.
Please.
I guess.
Well, thank you. That's Virginia Pierce, the director of the Utah Film Commission.
Planning a weekend on the couch? Streaming your favorite movie or a new show? Andy and Steve sort through it all so you only binge the best. It's the Movie Show Streaming Reviews on KSL News Radio.
We had multiple movies drop on streaming this week, and so let's talk about two of them, Steve. How about we start with Self-Reliance?
You have been selected to partake in the biggest reality show in the dark web. You will have 30 days to survive. You will only be killed when you are alone. Let's play.
So Jake Johnson is a guy who kind of leads a mundane life, lives with his mom, dated a girl for 23 years, and never got married.
Yeah, that
and one day Andy Samberg shows up in a limo and says, "Get in." And Andy Samberg takes him to these two guys who, German accents you heard, they say basically what was in the clip. Hey, we want you to take part in a game show that we broadcast on the dark web. You try to stay alive for 30 days, and if you do, you win $1 million.
And you won't know where the cameras are. There are people all around you, but you don't see them.
Yeah.
And they're filming you.
And maybe nobody shows up. Because the people on the killers are going to be coming from other places and they'd have to find you. So maybe you don't see anybody for 30 days and you win $1 million.
And there are other participants as well.
Yeah. So Jake's like, well, shoot. And then they say, but the thing is, if you're near anybody, they can't harm you. So he thinks that's a loophole. Oh, all I have to do is stay around somebody at all times for the next 30 days and I'm a millionaire.
And his family immediately say no. They don't want anything to do with it.
He finds it's a lot harder to stay close to somebody. Now, people who've been missionaries know that this is possible.
Yeah,
but that takes a required commitment where you're paying money to be that close to somebody.
But you have to be in the same room all the time.
Yes, almost basically within arm's length.
Yeah, so it doesn't always work.
Not an easy thing to do. At one point, he meets up with Anna Kendrick, who he puts out an ad on Craigslist, and she answers it and is like, I'm playing the game too. And so they're like, well, let's work together.
Yeah.
But this is, to me, this was one where it had some very funny moments. It felt like an idea that was a better idea than it was fully fleshed out into a full 90-minute movie. And Anna Kendrick wasn't in it enough for my taste because I really like her.
Yeah.
Jake Johnson kept making me think I was looking at Oscar Isaac, especially at one point when he gets a tooth chipped out. For some reason, he looked even more like Oscar Isaac then. But it did have some very funny moments, but for me, this was kind of a half-baked thing, and I gave it a C+.
Now, I liked Jake Johnson a lot. I loved The New Girl. I thought he was wonderful in that. And I could see his quirkiness throughout this movie, except it just left me flat at the end. I thought, okay, you've got me. Let's go. And then it stopped. And I'm like, no, don't just stop.
Oh, you got a Christopher Lloyd sighting in there. You're going to watch the opening credits if you watch this. And you're going to be like, oh my gosh, all these people are in it. And yeah, they're in it, but only for like a blink and you miss them almost.
Well, yeah, it's almost like a favor they did. All right, can you just be in it for like, 5 minutes?
We can probably just shoot you at your house.
So I think I like this more than you did.
Yeah.
I gave it a B- though, even at that, because
I felt like a C+ was generous, and it was only because some of the parts that were funny were really funny, and so I was like, okay, I'll give it a slightly better than average.
Well,
grade.
The pretend Ellen DeGeneres cracked me up. That was pretty funny.
That was pretty funny, too. And I like Natalie Morales, who has, again, too short of a role in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like she's going to be in
the 23-year girlfriend.
The 23-year girlfriend. So that is Self-Reliance. It is rated R, and it is streaming on Hulu.
Okay.
So now let's review Role Play.
The one and only. Hey, where are you? and I'll be right back.
The wife's real name is Anna Peller, wanted for contract killings across several continents.
I'm sorry. What?
All right, so role play is Kaley Cuoco from The Big Bang Theory. She plays a woman who married, has two kids. She's also an assassin on the side that her husband doesn't know about, nor do her kids. And so she's trying to get out of the game, but then she gets pulled back into the game. And we're kind of short on time, so I can't go into too much detail, but it's okay because I didn't think the movie was very good at all. It's streaming on Prime Video. So if you're a subscriber and you want to check it out because you like Kaley Cuoco, go ahead. But I didn't think it was very good. I kind of did buy her as an action star, which was kind of going to be the whole crux. But for me, this one's a don't worry about it if you don't want to see it.
Okay, Family Plan was this movie, except they played it for laughs.
Yes.
This movie was played seriously. I mean, she was a killer, and she killed a lot of people, even before, after, and during. So the fact that it's serious throughout the movie just completely, I thought, missed the mark.
Yes, there were a couple of funny moments, including Bill Nye has a role that was actually kind of funny when he's picking up on her at the bar.
Yeah, at the bar.
That was pretty funny. But for the most part, it was something that lent itself really well to parody, but it didn't have any of it.
C-plus for me.
All right, so C-plus for you, and that is called Role Play. And when we return on the movie show, we've got Telephone Torture.
The KSL Movie Show. Telephone Torture.
Telephone Torture. The number to call, 801-575-TALK, 801-575-8255. For Steve's theme today, a favorite comedy set in snow. Telephone Torture, sponsored by our friends at the Larry H. Miller Megaplex Entertainment. I think that's their official name now. We'll call them theaters till they officially correct us, maybe next week or something.
Yeah, in 20 minutes.
We've got a great prize from Megaplex Theaters, which, Steve, what is it?
It is two drinks.
Large drinks.
Yes. Tub of popcorn and two tickets to any of the movies. That could be like the IMAX or whatever you want to see.
We call it the date night package. So yeah. That's a great prize from the Megaplex Theaters. And Steve's favorite comedy set in snow is The Clue. We're going to ask a couple callers.
Not my favorite.
But it's a favorite comedy that happens to be set in snow.
In snow, yes.
Okay, so Cliffhanger is out because that's not a comedy. And I loved Cliffhanger with Stallone, and that was set in snow.
Could have been
this
funny.
This is not that. So we're going to ask a couple callers a question. If they, for some reason, are incorrect, we will then take the first correct answer on the text line at 57500. But, again, that's only if the callers don't get it right. So let's take our first potential winner. Do we have somebody? Todd, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Do you like comedies?
I do.
Okay, well, let's see if you can remember any that are set in snow. I know my favorite that I'll give after if it's not the winning answer. So go ahead, Steve, with question one for Todd.
Okay. Now, the first question is always a little tougher, so hang with me. While most of the exteriors of this 1993 movie were shot in St. Paul and surrounding towns in Minnesota, the interiors were filmed at Paisley Park Studios, owned by Prince.
Oh, so the exteriors were Minnesota. The interiors were also Minnesota, but it was a place that Prince owned.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. All yeah. right, Todd, what do you think?
Wow, this is a tough one.
Now think a lot of snow filmed in Minnesota. It's funny.
Groundhog Day.
Ooh, what a good guess. Is that correct, Gustavo?
Wrongo.
Todd, that's a great guess. But I will say, I do believe they... Oh, wow.
He's
Gustavo added
on.
The cruelty, including the laughing at the person for getting it wrong.
Uh-oh.
Goodness. That is a dark turn on the movie show.
Sorry, Todd.
Todd, that's a good guess. Although I will point out, they actually did film that movie in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, which is where Groundhog Day.
I think Todd is now realizing that.
But Todd,
yeah.
Thanks for calling in and trying, and good luck next week.
You're gonna kick yourself once you hear the second question.
All right, who's our second caller? Nate. All right, Nate, we've ruled out Groundhog Day. We know it was filmed in Minnesota. We know it was a comedy, and we know it was set in 1993. Steve, what's the next question?
Two legendary actors play cranky neighbors who have been feuding for decades. That rivalry intensifies when a lovely lady moves in across the street.
And we've got correct answers coming in on the text line.
Oh,
so it's up to you.
Dang it. It's the one with Matthew Broderick and Danny DeVito. But I cannot think of the name of it.
All right, just guess a movie name then.
It's Christmas with the Cranks, but it's not.
Christmas with the Cranks, is that correct, Gustavo?
You're killing me, Smalls.
Oh, good guess. You're actually incorrect about the actors in it, too.
It's Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau.
Oh,
now, if we had told you that, I bet you would have guessed it correct.
And the
right?
woman who moved in across the street is Anne Margaret.
Now, you can't win the prize because you did guess wrong, but if you knew that, what would you guess?
You know what? I'm drawing a blank, so... thank you, though.
Okay, good guess.
Sorry,
and
Nate.
Hey, thank you for playing Telephone Torture. So we have a winner on the text line. What is the answer, Steve?
Grumpy Old Men.
Grumpy Old Men. Congratulations to our winner, whose last four digits of their cell phone number is 8542. You guessed Grumpy Old Men just before, and I mean 1 second. Actually, you know what? This is an exact same timestamp.
Uh-oh.
You guys are both going to win the Megaplex prize pack.
You're just going to give away stuff?
I'm just going to give away another prize pack because that's not fair. Because this 7348, your last four digits of your cell, you texted it in at the exact same time as 8542.
And I know you haven't seen this movie.
Oh, I have, actually. Oh. This one I have. Actually, I saw it several times.
I've got the vapors. Are you serious?
It was classic. I love Anne
Margaret. Oh, it is one of the funniest movies.
The Green Hornet, his little fishing rod.
Yeah. And the putting the fish under the sea.
Oh, it is.
Everyone's in that movie.
It's pretty mean-spirited when you watch it with today's sensibilities. But, man, was it perfect back then.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah. So Grumpy Old Men is the answer. And our winners are on the text line. So look for a text from our producer, Gustavo, who will get your information so you can get that Megaplex prize pack of two drinks, a tub of popcorn, and two movie tickets.
Yeah. And sorry, Nate and Todd.
The winning bell.
I feel bad. I thought for sure they were going to get it on the second one.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of streaming series, and we'll do rapid fire as we wrap up the movie show for this week.
The movie show. It is not a donut hole, but a smaller donut with its own hole. And our donut is not a hole at all. On KSL News Radio.
Well, as we wrap up the movie show, Steve, we want to make sure we at least get a little bit of our thoughts on two streaming series that we didn't have. We were talking about movies all through the show.
Right.
Now we want to get the series. One of them is Echo, which came to Disney Plus. That is set on the street level of the Marvel Universe. This is the characters Kingpin and Echo and Daredevil. I don't think it's a secret that Daredevil's in the series.
He's in the trailer.
Yeah. But this is the deaf woman from Hawkeye, the series that we met, and she's the one who shot Kingpin at the end of that series.
Yeah.
What did you think of it? I actually didn't get a chance to watch it.
Oh, it's five episodes. You know, she really is. She's amputee, and she's deaf, and she's Native American. So, I mean, talk about diversity. This is about as far out there as you can get. And yet, I mean, she's very stoic. Everything is signed, so there's not a lot of dialogue, although some of the people, I mean, that are in it are – just right there with her. It's interesting. I thought, you know what? It's different. And it's not all flashy, but it really gets into the Choctaw Nation in Oklahoma, which I thought was very interesting. Kingpin survives the shot, and he has this weird...
And this is Vincent D'Onofrio,
who is absolutely brilliant in this. And they kind of go through a little thing there, and it's really... I thought, interesting.
Okay.
I want to see where it goes from here.
It is the first Disney Plus, or the first Marvel series to have a TVMA rating.
Right. So this is under the Marvel Spotlight program. They've got a whole new thing. So they want to kind of make it a little bit, the violence is ramped up.
Yeah, this is where they're going to put Deadpool when it finally hits streaming.
Oh, I see.
Later this year when the new Deadpool movie comes to streaming.
So I would say give it a shot. I think it's different. It's going to be, you know, a little adjustment, but I think it's pretty cool.
Fans of Daredevil want to see it because it is the Charlie Cox Daredevil, and he's got a huge, rabid following of fans. So
yeah, he just has one fight scene, though, in it.
Well, thanks for telling them. Now they're not going to watch all five episodes.
Well, maybe, maybe not.
And then our other sister, so Echo, TVMA, Hulu, and Disney Plus, it's streaming on. And then we have our final series of the week, which I can't believe as a Marvel fan I haven't seen Echo, but I have seen all but two episodes of Ted on Peacock. And this is Ted, Seth MacFarlane Ted, Teddy Bear, the vulgar Teddy Bear. Doug hated Ted, if I remember correct. But I hate how hard I laugh at the jokes in Ted. I hate how hard I laugh at it. But I do.
You know what? It's because Seth MacFarlane comes up with these quirky little things that he says in between scenes. I mean, just conversations that characters, that John Bennett. So this is a prequel.
Yes. So it's set when Mark Wahlberg's character from the movies was a teenager.
Yeah, he's in high school. And all the things that
he
you
goes
can
to
do
John Hancock High School, of course, because everything is overly Boston in this.
Oh, yeah. They're all set in Boston, and the mom and the dad are hilarious, and the cousin.
Yeah, cousin you don't know from the movies, but she's very good. Actually, her name's Georgia something or other.
What's her character's name? Brandy? Or?
I don't remember.
Shoot.
Anyway, she's good. She lives with her. She's in college while John's in high school. And what it does is each episode kind of sets a table for some joke that eventually pays off or a habit or whatever that was kind of had a joke in the Ted movies. There's a seedling of it. If you know him really well, you'll recognize it.
Like, yeah, here's the problem. If you haven't seen the Ted movies, this is not where you start.
No, that's a good
And
point.
If you liked the Ted movies, thought they were funny, then you're going to enjoy this. It's nasty.
Oh, yes. No.
He's nasty.
There is nothing family-friendly or friendly about this at all. But again, if you enjoy the Ted movies, then the series is just
it's
spot
right
on.
There, yes.
It's
right
spot
there
on.
With you.
So that is Ted, rated TVMA on Peacock. Steve, rapid fire, the movies we talked about today. Our big movie of the week was Mean Girls.
Yes.
Yes, I liked it, and I think your teen kids will like it even more maybe than you do. The Beekeeper, starring Jason Statham.
If you like Jason Statham, yes. If you don't, forget it.
Book of Clarence, I saw that, stars Lakeith Stanfield. It wildly, not wildly, but it veers back and forth between sacrilegious and profound. But if you watch it, watch the whole thing. I think you'll like it better having watched the whole thing than just stopping somewhere.
Okay.
Then we've got Lift on Netflix, starring Kevin Hart.
You're going to pass over American Fiction?
Oh, I did. American Fiction, starring Jeffrey Wright. I gave it an A-.
This is one of the best movies of the year last year. And you definitely want to see American Fiction.
And it is rated R. Lift on Netflix, rated PG-13, an action movie.
Yeah.
No, actually, I didn't hate it that much. I was thinking Night Swim, but it wasn't as good as I hoped. But it's on streaming, so you're not out anything if you don't like it.
If you saw Heart of Stone with Gal Gadot last year, this is the same movie.
And then we've got Role Play on Prime Video, which was Kaylee Cuoco as an assassin that her family doesn't know she's an assassin. This was one, for me, was a C+.
Yeah, but she's a funny character,
and not in this movie.
She's
they didn't use any
dead
humor.
Serious assassin. That does not work.
Bill Nye was the funniest part of that movie. And
David Oyelowo, I thought, was really good.
He was pretty good. I can never say his last name. That's part of the reason I avoid it. And then we've got Self-Reliance on Hulu. Funny moments, but I thought it was an idea that worked better than a full-length movie.
And I love Jake Johnson, so I thought it was good up until the end, which kind of fell flat.
All right, that is the movie show for this week. Thanks to Corey back at the studio, Gustavo, Steve.
Stone.
We'll catch you next week on the movie show.